Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. I've got a guest on the program today that I'm very excited to have on, Dr. Quentin Henning. Dr. Quentin Henning and I first met several months ago, actually on a trip out in Nevada, a couple sites. And since then, I've had the benefit of getting to know him quite well. Quentin, I would just finish your introduction by saying you're a bit of a unique geologist, not to put you on the spot, but there's a bit of a dilemma that many geologists aren't able to attract capital to their concepts. And you certainly have been very successful in many cases in attracting capital to your concepts and wrapping them into a business. And for that, you've become quite well known and had many successes. So I wanted to thank you for coming on the program and sharing your insights with us today.
Happy to, Colin.
All right. Well, let's start off and just discuss what you're seeing in the gold market right now. We had an interesting chat before we hit record here, and you were kind of talking about the loss of faith concept, and I'd like you to go over that with our listeners.
Yeah, look, you know, you look back at the last major world pandemic, 1918, we were still on the gold standard. It was shortly after World War II, whole different financial system, quite frankly. But today, we are, long a tooth in the fiat currency system. What I'm seeing today, or what my view is of the current events, people are starting to make decisions that are what I would call irrational. You know, they're making knee-jerk decisions, often which involve huge sums of money, and they're throwing it around without really thinking about the consequences, or because people perceive it to have value. If you have a dollar bill, the two parties that are engaged in the transaction, they see value, buy something. But when people start to lose faith in currencies, then it's a whole different kettle of fish. Now, imagine you have a bunch of kids, maybe four or five kids, sitting around playing Monopoly one day. They've got the Monopoly board out, and they've been playing for a couple hours. You know, they started with the cash that's, you know, given in a Monopoly game, so they had a set amount of cash. You know, you see some people who've done really well, some people who haven't done well. And Jimmy thinks, I'm going to solve this situation. I'm going to go in the closet because I know there's two more Monopoly games in there. I'm going to grab all the cash out of that, and we're going to bring it back over here, and I'm going to make up new rules how to distribute it. I'm going to give some to this guy and not to this guy, or I'm going to give some to this gal and charge her interest or whatever. You know, like he basically starts making up his own rules. Everyone in that game is going to sit there and look at each other. First of all, they're going to try to figure out how everything's affected them. They're going to try to figure out, how do I make life better for myself? How do I win this game? But they're soon going to be met with a certain level of uncertainty around what these new rules mean for them. You know, what impact does all this new money have? Well, that's where we're at today. Okay, a lot of people are looking around thinking, my gosh, they're going to be throwing money at businesses. You know, you look and there's disparities already. You know, some businesses that have subsidiaries can file for, different loans for each subsidiary, whereas others, you know, are going to lose out. They basically don't have the same kind of corporate structure, things like this. And that's just one example among probably millions that are going to show up. I mean, you're going to see people in neighborhoods, some who get huge benefits as part of this exercise, and then others you're going to end up not getting anything, or worse yet, they're going to have to pay for it. These kind of disparities cause a lot of anxiety amongst people. When the rules change and nobody knows really what's going to happen, think back to through history here. We had the Great Depression. We've had, you know, which was deflationary, and we've had bouts of inflation as well, you know, late 1970s, early 1980s. All of those were kind of rational, or could be rationalized, I should say. The people could sit down and they could think about what was driving that phenomena. What are we in? Are we in deflation? You know, I can argue with 10 people that say, yes, we're going to be in a deflationary period. Look at oil. My gosh, $11 a barrel. That's crazy. Then look at other things like gold. Gold's hanging tough. It's 1680. In fact, it's been going up over the past couple of weeks. Well, that's kind of strange. You know, does that suggest there's inflation? Is all this money that they're going to put out going to trigger the gold price to go up? We don't know. In fact, I'm not even going to guess that we can rationalize this stuff. But I can tell you this, that there is an inherent fear that's creeping into our society, into people in general. You know, no, unless you've been hiding under a rock, everybody knows debt is a huge problem. Everybody knows this. Okay, the government is deep in debt. Corporations are deep in debt. And people themselves are deep in debt. Okay, so everybody knows, playing this Monopoly game for quite some time. But I'll tell you what, with this change in rules, people, they're going to have a great deal of fear, a great deal of anxiety, because how are they going to pay that back? How are we going to pay this back? How are we going to pay the federal deficit? How are we going to pay anything back? Can we even pay it back? When they start asking questions like that, fear takes over, and guess what? You end up with what I would call emotional inflation. It's not driven. This time, it's not going to be driven necessarily by a clear excess of money, you know, like, you know, a rationalized excess in cash. Yes, they're throwing money out, but look at oil. It's in a deflationary mode right now. Okay, this time, inflation is going to be driven by sheer fear. People turn to gold when there's a lot of uncertainty. They always have. We've been doing it for 5,000 plus years. And I think you're going to see it happen again here, perhaps at an extraordinary level. Now, that brings the question, well, what's gold going to be worth? Look, if gold goes to $3,000 or $5,000 an ounce, it's not about the gold. It's about the dollar. And if people haven't figured that out, you know, you better think through that real quick. You don't want to see $5,000 gold. You don't want to see $20,000 gold, at least not anytime soon. If it happens very soon, that means the world has gone to heck in a handbasket, and fear is ruling. Okay, now, what do you do to protect yourself? Look, when you're afraid, you know, it doesn't hurt to have an insurance policy. If you know your house is at risk of collapsing or burning up or something like that, doesn't hurt to have a good insurance policy. Gold should be thought of as an insurance policy. If people buy it, have it, they can weather through times like this. Now, it doesn't just go for gold. Look at gold producers. Look at royalty companies. You know, there's a lot of very good companies out there that will continue producing gold, continue paying royalties, whatever, that are going to retain value. I would say use those as a hedge too. And I'm not trying to pump gold mining explicitly, but I would say if people want to retain value, the best way to do that is to have an insurance policy. And having some of your assets, some of your cash in gold and gold mining is not a bad thing.
Quentin, I've been recording Palisade Radio interviews for the last 6 years, and many of those interviews have focused around discussing what will lead to a gold bull market, what that bull market will look like, and that famous saying that the truth can be stranger than fiction seems to be playing out here. It almost feels like, you know, you were just saying you're not focused on telling people just to buy gold, but in a sense, it almost feels in this strange way like gold is the only safe thing that makes sense, the only thing that pops in my mind right now. And I never thought that we'd end up in a situation that's playing out where this much focus could go into gold.
Caution I have is that the gold market is very small. Okay, if you look at the global economy, we're talking about many, many trillions of dollars in value in various different forms. You know, cash aside, you've got huge values in stocks and, you know, commodities and other things. Gold is a very small niche. Okay, if you go all the way into gold, you could paint yourself in a corner. I had a chemistry professor that used to tell me, you know, it's a certain degree, everything's poisonous. You know, if you eat too many pickles, you can die of pickle poisoning. Okay. But I would say that being prudent and having a certain percentage, whatever, you know, 10, 20, 30% of your assets in gold, not a bad move right now. It's a good time for that. It's a good time, you know, as an insurance policy, it's a good time to protect yourself.
Absolutely. Well, Quentin, I want to talk to you about a couple of the companies that you're focused on right now. The most natural place to start is where you're the chairman and president, Novo Resources. Can you give an update to our listeners on what Novo is currently working on at the moment?
Certainly. We're working in the Pilbara region in Australia, a very unusual style of mineralization. We're dealing with gravel deposits that were laid down in ancient times, so about 2.7 billion years ago, what would be termed paleoplacer or paleoalluvial gold deposits. They are alluvial, meaning the gold was in particulate form. It was washed into these gravels. The gravels formed along ancient shorelines, along river systems. And those gravels became buried up. They were essentially buried and lithified and turned to rock. So now today we're dealing with layers of rock that have particles of gold, and the gold occurs as little, you know, nuggets, we'll say, in the matrix of those conglomerates. We found these different beds in different locations in the stratigraphy. So, you know, all the way from the bottom layer up through the sequence of rock we're dealing with. And we've also found places where these things have weathered out and produced modern alluvial systems as well. So we're really dealing with conglomerates such as at Karratha and Beaton's Creek, as well as more modern gravels that have the weathered derivatives of those at Egina. Now, why am I looking here? Well, if you look at the Earth's history way back about 2.7 to 3 billion years ago, there was really only one continent on the planet. It was a small continent, a little bit larger than, say, the island called Valbera. That's one term that geologists use. The other name I've seen out there is Earth, UR. Anyway, this continent was comprised of a single piece of land. We'll call it a proto-continent that has since broken up into different pieces and been scattered around the globe. One piece ended up in South Africa. And that piece in South Africa hosts the Witwatersrand Basin. It's a very large gold field. We have the Pilbara Craton. And lo and behold, on top of the Pilbara Craton are a sequence of rocks that are very similar to those that you see in South Africa. So the underlying thesis for working here is that if there's substantial gold in South Africa, maybe there's a chance of finding similar deposits in Australia in the similar sequence of rocks that we find there. So we've been working there for about 11 or 12 years now. Started out at a very conceptual level. We've now taken several projects to a very advanced state. For instance, Beaton's Creek, effectively ready for mining. It's about a 900,000-ounce resource right now, which doesn't sound all that big, but it's wide open in multiple directions, and we are looking to advance it and put it into production. Now, these deposits are nuggety. NOVO has spent the past few years developing protocols, including bulk sampling and processing, that allow us to get a reasonable estimate of grade to a comfort we can advance these projects. It's kind of like assessing diamond deposits in many respects. So that's our main strength, our main focus is chasing these nuggety conglomerates. And what we believe is that if we can then unlock more and more of these things. We've got large swaths of the Pilbara under claim right now. We have evidence in many places, Karratha, Egina, and so forth, that this style of gold is out there. At Egina, for example, last week we announced some results that show very broad areas of gold mineralization, similar to what we saw last year in our test area. Okay, this is encouraging stuff. When you consider that the property we have encompasses many thousands of square kilometers, and you start to see broad-scale channels or swales like this, where the gold point counts and stuff that we're getting, it's not hard to imagine this could be a substantial gold system. So we're basically going along. We want to find what could be the next major gold field on the planet. Even though it's a very unusual style of gold, it's a very, you know, challenging in some respects style of gold mineralization. We are confident that we're on to something very large. We're also very, I'm very fortunate. We have a very strong team that has a lot of, horsepower in terms of ability to understand and affect this work. Okay, so it takes a lot of ingredients here to succeed, but we've got the right ingredients. And I think once we get into production at Beaton's Creek, I think you'll see a lot of other pieces fall together very quickly, and we can start to pull all this picture together and turn NOVO from an explorer into a significant gold producer over the next couple of years.
Quentin, thank you for that. I want to also touch on a story that's a little bit closer to home for myself. In fact, when we first met a few months ago, I shared with you a recent drill intercept that Newfound Gold, a private company, had hit. And interestingly, you pretty quickly saw some similarities to the Fosterville discovery that you had a good deal to do with, also with Eric Sprott, who's an investor there. What can you tell listeners about Newfound Gold? Novo is a 15% shareholder of Newfound Gold.
Yes, that's a very good question. I went to look at Fosterville in early 2016, at a time when Eric was considering increasing investment in the market. And I was very fortunate to see the early drill holes close up. It had very strong indications that it's what we call an epizonal gold system. These are basically, we'll call it shallow, you know, with respect to orogenic systems, they're within 2 kilometers of surface, you know, the stuff they form. And in this regime, you can get some absolutely spectacular high-grade mineralization. It's almost like the boiling zone within an epithermal system, you know, a hot spring system. And in doing so, you can generate, you know, multi-ounce material, but it comes with very diagnostic characteristics. You know, you see relic banding of quartz. You see very fine-grained, you know, voidal gold in places. You see textures like open space rugs and stuff like this that there really are just a dead giveaway to being in this type of system. When you showed me the core photos back in January, and then we had the chat with Denny and Greg, it became very clear to me that you for a look, I think it was late January, we went and saw core close up, hands down, same type stuff. You see the fugs, you see the fine grained gold, you see the antimony rich minerals. It was very exciting to work at Fosterville in those early days. And I see the same thing at Newfound Gold. I think that, you know, onto something very big, given that, but it's the fact that there are other high grade, you know, I think you basically found the sweet spot in an orogenic system that can deliver very high grade and you know, potentially very large size gold endowment.
Quentin, I don't want to rob listeners of any of the other exciting stories that you're currently involved in. Irving, you've got Lionor, there's also some other companies there. What else do you want to tell us about today?
Well, look, I help a number of companies. I decided to go this route of helping different companies because the traditional route of being, say, vice president of a major mining company in exploration just doesn't hold today. There aren't a lot of big companies out there exploring. So I decided to basically tackle my passion, my love, which is exploration, by helping a number of different companies look for new things. So in Irving, we are chasing high-grade epithermal veins in Hokkaido. It's the northernmost island in Japan. And we basically settle on, our focus is on one system at a place called Omu. And lo and behold, even though we're very early in exploration there, we've already made significant discoveries of vein systems, some very high grades in places. So, you know, delightful story, delightful outcome. Lion One is in Fiji. It's an alkaline gold system. I love alkaline systems. When I grew up here in Colorado, I actually cut my teeth on the alkaline systems in my backyard, which is Boulder County, but also Cripple Creek here in Colorado, which is a major alkaline system. When I went to Vatu for the first time and looked at that system, hands down, it's an alkaline gold camp. I told Wally and his crew that I thought it could be many, many times larger. Then did the systematic exploration work last year to show that the footprint of mineralization is much larger. And now we're starting to do some deep drilling, again, that's showing the system is much larger. In my view, Tuvatu could be a 10-plus million-ounce system. So, you know, I like working on big things. I don't like to screw around. I like working on things that are new, innovative, and could make a difference to the gold mining sector.
Excellent. Well, Quentin, thank you so much for coming on the program and sharing your thoughts with us today. And, you know, we'll have to see how things play out here with the loss of faith that's happening and the monopoly game that's currently going on. I think money is finally going to come back into the exploration space in a bit more abundance over the coming months and years ahead.
Fully agree.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?